you appreciate about Ridley Gregg's game?
Everything. You know, he's a bit of a throwback. You know, the 200-foot game. He's physical, he's smart, he's competitive.
How are you a different player than you were back in December?
I think for the most part, probably just my strength. I put on a couple pounds, so I think that'd be the main part. Yeah, I just caught him with his head down. I think it was pretty clean, so kind of went from there, yeah. Yeah, it's a huge part of the game still, and obviously for my game, for myself, I always like to lay the body around a little bit, so yeah.
Check will send this back around the boards. Romero will try and get it down low. On and off the stick of Kurtz to the front of the net. Score! A bouncing puck that ends up on the stick of Menchiak. He'll get it across. And Czechia is on the board.
TSN 1200.
Welcome back to TSM Mornings, hour number three. Leave your sage in for a vacationing JR, but Sean Simpson is here in his regular spot, and Cam also here for a vacationing Matt Hamer. Glad you're with us on a Wednesday morning, and you heard there some Ridley Gregg stuff. World Juniors tonight, Canada, Latvia, 6 o'clock. We have the game for you, pregame at 5:30. And Sean, you and Jim Taddy going to be handling some of the pregame and postgame duties all tournament long. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be exciting, Lee. Just kind of dive in. I'd end up watching, especially in Canada when it comes to Sens prospects. But yeah, fun to do a little research, get to know some of the players and that top line of Mr. Roy, Mr. McTavish, along with Connor Bedard. And this is kind of the kickoff to the Connor Bedard show as you go really now till next year's draft. And yeah, as far as Ridley Gregg, that's one thing when you look at these tournaments, Lee, and you understand that there are kids that are well into being 20 years old. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot to people, but the disparity, and I'm wondering when Ridley Gregg starts, like where the engine is going, and McTavish is right there. But I find it hard to believe that he won't end up in the top six and probably be in a much bigger role in a sense of, like I said, I don't know the players well enough, but just because of the maturity. And that's going to be a big key there as you look at what the United States has done. And from a Canadian perspective, you know, will some of the kids that have had a shorter summer that were just drafted, that were first round picks, will some of that start to fall off? Well, we'll tune in tonight and watch against Latvia.
Latvia played yesterday in their first game. They lost 6-1 to Finland. And so Canada and Latvia tonight, 6 o'clock, and we'll have all the games for you here on TSN 1200. Before we get to Max Pacioretty, a little bit of news here, not great news. Boya Salming has received news and put out a statement that the signs indicate that something was wrong and my body has turned out to be the disease of ALS, known as Lou Gehrig's disease. In an instant, everything changed. I do not know how the days ahead will be, but I understand there will be challenges greater than anything I've ever faced. I also recognize there's no cure, but there are numerous worldwide trials going on, and there will be a cure one day. In the meantime, there are treatments available to slow down the progression. My family and I will remain positive. He did go on with a little bit longer of a statement, but some sad news. Boya Salming putting out a statement that he has ALS, and I have to admit, Simmer, growing up, he was one of the very first names that I recognize, and growing up in Toronto and watching Leaf games, he just played the game a little bit differently than everybody else.
Well, not only that, like he had a combination of he wasn't going to necessarily be pushed around, but he got completely abused. And for that group, and I wasn't a Leaf fan, but I'll go McDonald, I'll go Sittler, I'll go Turnbull, I'll go Salming, and probably Mike Palmateer. Like that's kind of what it was. And I've had lots of buddies that played with him, just to mention what a great guy. And I was fortunate enough a number of years ago. Oh my God, it'd almost be, he's 71 years old, but it'd be 18 years ago. I was in Gothenburg, Sweden for the World Championships, and my buddy Callie Johansson and myself, and I ended up being Peter Forsberg. We all went out for a couple of beers, and Boria was a legend to those players. Like, he was a pioneer, Lee. Like, you know what I mean? He come over and took the lumps for a lot of the Swedish players, worked through a really hard time, but at the same time, man, he just looked like he could still play. Had the big scar on the face, absolutely jacked, in great shape, and I think he's from northern Sweden, but he just felt like a man's man and had a real nice time just hanging out. But it was really watching even Peter Forsberg and Callie like I said, he was the godfather of Swedish hockey and coming over and did what he did. So very sad to see that. And another one of those names that probably doesn't get mentioned enough when we talk about Wendell Clark and Doug Gilmore, you know, and Matt Sundin. But without a doubt, Lee, you mentioned that name in that market. And man, he's a living legend. Like, he really is, right? I mean, Boreas Salming, that's about as synonymous with the Toronto Maple Leafs as you can come, right? And so very sad to see that going.
Yeah, and especially for me, like, as a very small kid, I grew up watching the Leafs in the, you know, very early 80s. And we're talking, you know, the Rick Vives and the Peter Inicheks.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, but Boreas Salming was kind of the guy. And I always remember my father, as a defenseman, me sitting down and saying, look at the way that this guy skates. Look at the way that he plays the game with a physical presence. He just did everything a little bit differently. And my father loved the way that Boreas Salming played the game.
Well, and that's the beautiful part, Lee. And you say pioneer, so we'll go 40 years ago, even more than that, at 71 years old. But it was coming over. And just how much better the game of hockey is because of that, the integration. We brought some of the European stuff, and they brought some of ours. Now we have by far the best, well, we always had the best league on the planet, but it's been the integration, Lee, and it took the pioneers of those players to come over. And the physical abuse, I'll even go back to as late as Jágr's career. You know, there was still a standard where the European players were treated differently. Fortunately, we're not there, and the game itself has evolved into a higher skill, higher speed. And as I said, Boreas Salming was a trailblazer to come along and just adjusting the lifestyle. You know, it wasn't easy. And then for other Swedish players to say, hey, you know what? And then finally, years and years later, you get the Nick Lidstroms coming along, and it's because of the Boreas Salmings that we're able to say, okay, here's what it's all about. Here's what you need to do. You know, there was a roadmap because of Boreas Salming.
So the Maple Leafs and Boreas Salming putting out a statement today, and the news of Boreas Salming having ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and hopefully he fights it as well as possible, Simmer. I know it's a tough disease.
Yeah, and that would be a spot where you know, I would assume, you can be critical of Toronto, but under Brendan Shanahan, they've done a great job with their alumni, and hopefully with, you know, some of the best medical situations or places in Toronto in the world, yeah, you would really hope that, and I would assume the Leafs will step in and try to do the best they possibly can.
16 seasons with the Leafs from 73 through to 89. So we wish the very best for Boreas Salming and his family. Max Pacioretty, Simmer, surgery for a torn Achilles. So after the trade that sends him from Vegas to the Carolina Hurricanes, 6 months, the recovery time for a torn Achilles for Max Pacioretty. A little bit of a blow as they were trying to, I think, change things up a little bit with Pacioretty and Brent Burns.
Yeah, you're trying to kind of fine-tune, and they move it around, bring in a couple of older players. Pacioretty, still, again, a great skater, and I would assume, again, with medical these days, Lee, he'll come back and be good. Has never been over to physical or great in the playoffs, so that's a concern. We'll see how he and Brent Burns. But you mentioned before the show, and I think a great point, they were in some salary cap trouble, looked like they had to move somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That should, based on, you know, the long-term IR and the salary cap relief, probably put them in a pretty good spot, but still not the plan. I mean, they're entering training camp like very few teams of. The only goal that Carolina has right now is try to win a Stanley Cup. So this isn't buying time like Tampa Bay or trying to maneuver anything, and this is quite simply a training accident. You know, something happens at the end, you know, whatever, and it's unfortunate. What is nice now is that the Achilles tendon injury that used to be a career ender has certainly come a long ways in the last 10 years.
Yeah, we remember Jean-Gabriel Pageau on the first day of training camp here with the torn Achilles. It's a tough injury to come back from, but it's not, as you said, a career ender, which is good news. And for the Carolina Hurricanes, you would expect that they'd be in a pretty decent spot even without Max Pacioretty. For the year. And I don't blame the Hurricanes. We talked about the Florida Panthers making the move for Matthew Tkachuk and really shaking up some of the core when they hadn't got it done in the playoffs. I kind of liked what the Hurricanes did. They were a team that is a great regular season team, but when it came to needing goals and needing some tough play, they had a very difficult time when it actually mattered. And I'm not sure that Max Pacioretty and Brett Burns are going to solve all of those issues, but I do appreciate to a little bit of a lesser extent with like the deal that Florida made that sent, you know, really superstars and Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar the other way to go get Matthew Tkachuk, that they did switch up some of what they're about because they don't want to go through kind of the same troubles that they've had.
Yeah. And you also, you know, you got off the D'Angelo train, which you probably just want to do for 1 year, although we'll see where he evolves as a person. But you got two forwards that neither can play defense. And that's what Brent Burns is at this point in his career. And that's what Matt Pacioretty is. But I understand what you're saying, Lee. And this goes back to like teams, and Detroit did this a lot. You kind of tinker with it, right? You're right there. You go back to Edmonton when they had won cups. Glenn Sather every year would switch out a few of the role players, right? Yeah, and so I agree with what you're saying. Hey, you're just trying to, can you shift it around here? You believe in your core. You bring in a couple of quality people. A guy like Brent Burns, you see some of those training videos and what a great guy he is and a change up of energy. And yeah, and at the end of the day, as you sit here with the Florida Panthers, and especially after Huberdeau, you know, extending his contract, I don't think for the coming season that Huberdeau is a better player than Matthew Tkachuk. And you have taken your second best defenseman off your team in Weegar. There's no way you're better for it, Lee. I mean, I don't care what. And Matthew Tkachuk isn't even Brady, isn't his dad. He's a hell of a hockey player. But he doesn't change the complexion of a hockey game, in my estimation, the way that Huberdeau can. And the part of Mackenzie Weegar and what he meant to Ekblad, there's no way I look at that. That's forward progress for the Florida Panthers.
Does it mean anything to you how little Jonathan Huberdeau has done in the playoffs?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Again, I understand that. But Matthew Tkachuk hasn't been great either. You know what I mean?
Agree.
So, but I agree. Like, am I nervous about Huberdeau now? If you're a Flames fan and you get there, you know, part of it is getting there, Lee, but it's hard. But I'm just saying is that, you know, if Matthew Tkachuk I thought was a true game changer, that's where I look at a guy like Puljujarvi. I'm going a bit off course here with the Oilers of, okay, Lee, there's different players that you care. You know, Matthew Tkachuk, you don't care. He has 104 points. Playoffs, I expect him to be more. A guy like Puljujarvi, you kind of carry during the regular season. You say, yeah, he's a big body. When did you get to the playoffs, right? Look at Nick Paul. Look at other guys. Can't find the guy. You know what I mean? So am I worried? Yeah, I guess I'm worried. But under the circumstance, would I have still done what Calgary did? Absolutely.
Text coming in, 12-1200. Hate the Leafs, always will, but you have to recognize some of the great players no matter where they played. And during that era, without Harold Ballard, that team could have won a cup. Some prayers to Borja Salming.
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, and again, how iconic. It was still the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, you look at, I'll use a little juxtapose it with the Montreal Canadiens in their prime at the time, Lee, winning multiple Stanley Cups. But gosh, didn't still, for a lot of people that were Leafs fans, again, that group, to Lanny McDonald, to Daryl Sittler, Ian Turnbull, I don't know why I mix that in, but I just remember the name all the time. And Borja Salming and Mike Palmentier. And all these guys along with, and what was also as interesting as you mentioned some of the other names there, I had worked with Peter Anicek when I was in Toronto and he was living over in Germany. That was the first wave of, you know, Toronto was out in front of it along with the Nordiques, right, of bringing over, you know, Miroslav Fricher, you know, some different guys there to try that out. And that was a tough transition, you know, and then even for the Stassis, thankful that Peter was able to help out his brothers, but it was not easily, you know, that these guys showing up all of a sudden, and especially the guys from the Soviet bloc, you know, that was a whole different animal on what you're going to get in the transition into regular life. And like I said, these guys at the end of the day were trailblazers, and they took a lot of crap on the ice.
Yeah, and I don't think we appreciate that as much, how difficult it really was back in the day. And you mentioned, I loved Miroslav Fricher as a little kid, 6 and 7 years old. And I mean, those teams, they didn't have some of the top talent, but you think of what Borja Salming was able to do and lead some of the other defensemen for that team. But yeah, the Bill Dirlegos and the Rick Vives and the Greg Therrien, loved the way that Greg Therrien played the game. So, but they just never had that ability to have kind of real superstar players. I know Gary Lehman had 50 one year, but it was one of those teams that just never seemed to have the big time talent.
No, it was a gong show. I mean, you had crazy owner. I think back to, can't remember, was it Gary Nyland trade? And a couple of guys came back. I think it was an offer sheet from Chicago. And basically it was Dan Dau and somebody. I think Harold Ballard threw him under the bus right away. You know, it was just crazy circumstantially. And to that, as you transition through that time, think about Luke Richardson drafted in 1987. that was one of his mentors. You know, he talks about that and talks about Brad Marsh and having people and what would that have meant to Luke's career. So then you fast forward, and that's where it changed when Harold Ballard passed away, and then enter Cliff Fletcher. And I just started scouting then in 92. The transformation of the franchise, the way it was handled, and then you mix in the Doug Gilmore trade, the Dave Andrechuk trade, and now Pat Burns rolls in. Hey, all of a sudden, this thing has been completely rebranded, and you would be hard not to look at some of the parallels here in Ottawa of how quickly things have changed here, and some of the optimism has come with some of the changes as well.
So you started scouting for them in 92. How long did you stay in Toronto?
No. I was with the Caps from 92. That's when I started scouting. First draft, first scouting. So I was with that. It was 12 years of doing that, and then I was only with the Leafs for four. A little time in the KHL, a little consulting with Minnesota, and TSN 1200 the last 10 years.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
So kind of back to Carolina and Florida and some of the teams at the top that have made some changes to try and change the makeup of their teams. Who's under more pressure, Carolina or Florida, to win now?
What do you call pressure, Lee? And I say that in many ways. Yep. Is the market have any pressure? No. There's no pressure in either market, which isn't a good thing. As to what ownership has as pressure, I don't know any of it. Are you talking more kind of the window of where they're at?
Yeah, I guess so.
The window, I would say, is darn close. I think Carolina might be a tad younger, but I think the sweet spot for both of these franchises right now, and I'll say for Florida, after Bill Zito kind of emptied his gun on all the deals he made at the trade deadline, they put a lot of assets out the door now, and I don't know how much they have left to play at the end of the day. So, I think the window for Florida is probably a little bit greater, but I know what you're saying, and that's where it has to come from, because we can't gauge in that market public pressure because there isn't any, and how the owners are going to react. But I think the window, Bill Zito had been doing such a good job, but I think he closed that just a little. It's not closed, but you know what I mean? It's tightening a little more. Where Carolina, they still have a pretty young core there and a very good hockey team.
Well, yeah, Florida doesn't have a first-round pick for the next 4 years.
Exactly. And outside of Spencer Knight, and I don't know their prospects, but you look at a thin blue line that I don't think anybody looks at and think could win a Stanley Cup along with Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight. As good as Spencer Knight's going to be, and that will be interesting there too. Their analytics numbers last year were not strong, although the Bob was good in the playoffs. Can they transition to Spencer Knight and afford Bob at the same time? And then up front, how does this kind of all go? I'm not a Reinhart fan in any shape or form, and if you want to talk about guys I don't think you'll ever win with in the playoffs, I would have been moving way past him before Huberto, but I also understand there's economics involved, Lee.
Yeah, Reinhart's got two years left on his deal at 6.5. Sam Bennett's been a nice acquisition from them.
Not bad. Yeah, I mean, I expected a little more out of him come playoff time as far as the sandpaper ability to get to the net, but he's certainly been better than he was in Calgary.
Is it difficult or is it proper to judge the Florida Panthers based on two playoff losses to the Tampa Bay Lightning of the last couple of years?
I you'd have to do that internally, Lee, but you're going against the best in the business. You also understand they're not going away. So I don't fault them because I also go back to Tampa Bay and how many times they tried being swept by Columbus, missing the playoffs. It's just a question of what is your true belief in what you have. And in this particular case, they did not believe in it, so they altered their course. But that's something you just have to decide internally. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of, if you watch, I love Matthew Tkachuk. He's a really good player. But when I watch his dad a lot and when I watch Brady, there's a different element there come playoff time as big bodies that I think there's a bit of a myth that Matthew Tkachuk is that. He's more of a crap disturber and a very good hockey player, do you know what I mean? Where he doesn't impose his way physically. And I think that's a bit of a misconception that is something that both Brady and obviously Keith really have in the National Hockey League.
So Max Pacioretty going to be out for 6 months, torn Achilles for the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll take a quick break, come back, talk some more World Juniors, some baseball, and a couple of funny baseball stories to pass along in the 9 o'clock hour as well. Lever Sage, Sean Simpson with Cam Big Red here on TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Welcome back, TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Lever Sage, Sean Simpson, and Cam Big Red. The Toronto Blue Jays had a lead, They had a rain delay. Everything looked good in Baltimore, but the rain delay ended, and so did the Blue Jays' hopes of winning the game. Rougned Odor with a home run in the bottom of the eighth inning to put Baltimore out to the lead, and they held on 6-5 to beat the Toronto Blue Jays for the second straight night. And the Blue Jays, yes, the first team in the wild card race. Seattle and Tampa, your other two wild card teams. But Baltimore, Minnesota. Baltimore's only a half game back. Minnesota only a game back. And all of those teams, Toronto, Seattle, Tampa, Baltimore, and Minnesota, just separated by two games in the loss column. Concerns here for the Toronto Blue Jays?
I think you're always concerned, kind of a team of destiny in the Orioles, why it's being handled, but also in Jackie Bradley Jr. And I thought that this was a spoof or something, because I didn't realize, has he been out of work, or has he been cut by whoever he was with? Anybody know?
Yeah, so the Red Sox DFA'd him.
Okay, and so I saw that, Cam, and I look at this, Lee. What do you try to do? Funny, we had the Paul Molitor conversation. Any voice like that, that's a veteran player that could come in right now, give you anything, but more importantly, in the dugout, and a guy that's won a World Series, has played in a Boston market, I think this is a great move. But as far as being worried, absolutely. I mean, you have to, how can you not be if you're a Jays fan? They have been, I guess, consistently inconsistent, and it also feels like maybe it's just the Orioles effect. Feels like the manager change is just flattened out a tad, you know? So, yeah, I think that's a nice move. And, yeah, you have to be concerned for where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to get, not always, but usually there's a manager bump, you know, at some point, other than, like, if you make a big trade, you switch a manager out, it's going to give you a little bit of a lift, unless you're the San Diego Padres. But for John Schneider, you're right, Zimmer, it has flattened out here a little bit. So, Cam, what is the problem that they've lost four of their last five?
On Schneider, I will say last night was the first time I kind of scratched my head with the decision he made bringing in Anthony Bass for the sixth inning to face the bottom of the order. He got through it easily, but then you bring in Adam Zimmer to face the top of the order the next inning, and then he gave up a run. So as far as the big picture, though, I'm still not worried overall. They've dealt with some injuries here cropping up in recent weeks, but I think going forward, I still have a lot of faith in this offense and the starting rotation. By and large, I don't think Manoah will have many more outings like that. So I think overall you stay the course and for first wildcard spot, like you pointed out. But you got to win ball games, and that should start tonight with Berríos on the mound, who needs to bounce back after rough homecoming in Minnesota last weekend.
10.5 back of the Yankees. You still think they're going to catch him?
I think it has more to do with the Yankees, because if they continue to play poorly, then yeah, I think they could fall back to the pack and it could be realistic. But I would say at this point, the Jays just aren't playing good enough to really have an eye on that. It's about the Orioles are two games back of you, and you got the Guardians coming up this weekend, so I think that is your focus right now, and you can't really look in front of you when you have teams nipping at your heels.
You're not wrong, Simmer, about adding Jackie Bradley Jr. here to the team just to give it a little, you know, more experience. But it does seem a little bit like, whether it is, you know, Bradley Zimmer or whether it is Whit Merrifield, now Jackie Bradley Jr., like, how many guys are they going to bring in here? Yeah. Until George Springer's ready to go.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, Merrifield so far has been real good energy involved. And as I said, Lee, you keep going. And if they're low-cost moves and they're basically in addition to your group that you think can push it along and you're not giving anything up, I guess you don't stop. Now, is he eligible to play in the playoffs, or how does that work now in baseball?
Yeah, he would be eligible
to play
in the playoffs.
They used to have that old rule, right, where there's one trade deadline, then another one, where you could come in and play the rest of the regular season but couldn't play in the playoffs?
I need to add the caveat, too, though. He hasn't really hit much at all for the last couple of seasons, so I think you're bringing in more to be a defensive specialist.
Oh,
like Zimmer,
right? Yeah. Well, so, you're not getting him at this point, unless that's exactly that, Kevin. Like you said, I just think having played in the Boston market and having won a World Series, but as a person that doesn't follow baseball very often, I doesn't feel like that long ago, that he was like a superstar. So it just kind of took me back. I'm like, come on, this can't be real.
Yeah, and yeah. He can play in the playoffs because he was deactivated. It wasn't a trade that ended up happening, right?
Yeah.
And that's why, Cam?
Well, he'll have enough service time
right.
to play up. And it's not like if you bring up September call-ups and stuff like that. That's the only reason. That's the only time you deal with ineligibility.
So we'll see if the Blue Jays can finally beat Baltimore. As you mentioned, Jose Barrios on the mound tonight going up against the Orioles. A little golf because the LIV Tour still making headlines. They lost a court settlement yesterday to try and have a couple of their, three of their players, lesser-known players, play in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So they lost that dispute with the PGA. But did they gain one of the major competitors? It seems that way. Cameron Smith reported by a couple of Australian reporters in The Telegraph in Australia, signed a $100 million deal with the LIV Tour. And right now is still on the PGA Tour. And so the formal announcement is not expected until the conclusion of the FedEx Cup. And so this one's a really interesting one, Simmer, for me, because he's one of the top golfers that could possibly win the FedEx Cup. And if everyone thinks he's signed this deal with LIV Golf to go over for $100 million, but he's going to play out the rest of the year, this has got some drama written all over it, because for him to go over to the other tour and meanwhile play all of the playoffs, I don't think it's going to be very well received by some of the guys in the locker room, some of the crowds that, and I don't know how much we all care about the FedEx Cup playoffs at this point, but still, this doesn't look like something that's going to go very well.
Yeah, if you walk around with that hairdo and that mustache, you're used to Abuse Lee. So I'd be honest with you.
He looks pretty sharp.
I don't really care. Like, I don't think he should care. Hey, listen, this is businessman. And listen, I'm going to play the rest of the year, which I played. I deserve to come out here. And whether other golfers are mad, honestly, Lee, and this whole thing about where you're getting the money from and leaving the tour, like, it is so ridiculous in comparison to the NBA and the money they make off of China. Hey, I'm taking care of my family. I don't have the contract signed right now, or if it's signed, it doesn't start until after then. This is business at the end of the day, and if any fans or any other people have an issue with it, that's their problem.
But do you think it's good, though? Like,
what do you mean good, though? Like, I know what you're saying. What do you mean good? Like, in what good?
So, if I'm a fan of the PGA Tour,
yeah,
and I know that a guy has already kind of defected and gone over to the other tour, but he's still going to compete for the title. Mm-hmm. That's going to, for me as a PGA Tour fan, it's kind of making me pick sides here.
Well, it can, Lee. I just would never take it personally, but I understand that. But how many players, and again, soccer, where there's a transfer, the player's going to be transferred out. Hey, enjoy him the rest of the year. He's come in, he's put in the work, and he's one of the best players on the planet. He deserves to be there. I understand as a fan, because what also started out as a bit of a joke has now taken a major, a ton of momentum out of your tour, Lee. Like, this is really not like the old WHA where you sign a bunch of old players, or the USFL. Like, they have made a dent in a hurry. As to where the tour ends up going, who knows? But no, I totally understand that part of it. I just, as a fan, like I said, I respect the fact of what he wants to do. And for this particular year, he has every right to be playing in that tournament.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a very good reaction for him and the fans. And yeah. I think to be able to express that opinion, I'm looking forward to watching how this all plays out. Because if I were a fan, and I'm not a huge fan of the FedEx Cup playoffs, I'm not going to, if the tournament's in my area, I don't really care. But if I'm one of those people who are going to go to these tournaments and, support or cheer for my favorite golfer down the stretch here, when that guy comes up, I'm heckling that guy.
Yeah, no,
I'm booing that guy.
I don't disagree, Lee, and I understand, and I totally respect fans feeling that way. I just don't really understand, and I like Rory McIlroy away, but the standing up on your high horse and talking about how your moral ground is greater than anybody else, I just, that was funny when I first heard it. And at first there was a big lot of noise about taking money from the Saudis and everything that they've done. And like I said, you start to trace around, F1 has Saudi money all over it. Where you're going to trace the money? got young Canadian kids still going over to play in the KHL. Like, So, like I say, I Rory McIlroy, you want to stay, and I like you. And for Tiger, I wonder if he'll second, you know, wonder maybe is that offer still on the table? But this is really made a big hit on the PGA Tour. And what you always hopefully in anything else, you just hope this changes the sport a little bit, right? There are a lot of players that don't like the PGA Tour, don't like the control they have. It is its own entity that maybe it makes it a little more global. Maybe you see a merger between the two at some point. That's what you're hoping for. And at the end of the day for the players, all this has already meant is more money for the guys that have left, more money for the guys that are on the tour, and more jobs for guys that couldn't make the PGA Tour. So don't think for a second that there's that many players that are that upset about it.
Yeah, and some texts coming in. Leah, are you really a PGA Tour fan, or are you a golf fan? There's a big difference. I love watching golf, whether it's the Open or the President's Cup or whatever, from CB. I guess I'm a PGA Tour fan because I can tell you what I'm not watching, the LIV Tour. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't, like, whether it goes on or not, whether they get a huge following, I do not care. So if that makes me not a golf fan because I want to watch the PGA Tour, because what I do care about a little bit more for me is the history of the game. Mm-hmm. And whether it's, and I don't know whether the players, and Brad Fritsch has been on the station a lot talking about, you know, in the next couple of years, it doesn't look right now like the LIV Tour is going to be able to award kind of world golf ranking points to the extent that the players need to get into the majors. And they're not going to need, and I thought this was the best point that's been made so far, the majors aren't going to have to, like, rule out the LIV golfers and make this big statement like these guys are not allowed to play. What's going to happen here in the next couple of years, listening to Brad Fritsch a lot, is the fact that those tournaments that the LIV golfers are playing are not going to offer the points required for some of these guys or most of them to get into the majors in the first place. So almost by their own merit, they're not going to be able to qualify for the majors.
And so, who's going to be hurt more, the player or the tournament, Lee? And this is what I say.
The player.
And I know you love the history of the Wyndham Classic and other great PGA events.
I was talking about the majors.
No, I'm talking about the PGA Tour. First of all, the majors are technically not owned by the PGA Tour.
I know.
And so when they can play, and again, I'll use Smith as an example, and you go through a few more. Well, as soon as the Masters come along and you're missing five of the top 10 players in the world, it's really hurt in the tournament. And it certainly the player is hurt as well, Lee. But yeah, I mean, that is such a mistake. Now, and I only watch the majors, the PGA Tour, the history of it, what they do have is integrity, and it does mean something. Now, the individual championships I don't care about, but it's hard to produce that in other things. That's always your quality control, Lee, what you end up doing. But the majors themselves, like if golf has not already been hurt by the PGA Tour, as fans start to look through the majors now, and I would be foolish by, and I'll be curious how each of them handle it, but if I'm the Masters in particular, well, any of them, I am bringing the best players in the world, and if I identify that Cameron Smith and some of the other guys don't have enough points, I really don't care. I want the absolute best players competing at my tournament. I don't care where they're playing. That is not my problem.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think there's a lot of guys that are going to play well and earn those points to be in the Masters. And when the Masters is on, I'm going to forget about Cameron Smith real quick. Like, I think he's a great golfer. That's fantastic. But if he's going to go over and play in the LIV Tour and I'm never going to hear from him anymore and he's not going to qualify and be in any of the majors, is he really a top 10, top 5 golfer in the world still? I guess that's what you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, it's a great point, Lee, and it will be interesting. You know, and the part of, you know, for golf, there aren't, you know, there's only X amount of players. And as far as the PGA Tour, you know, I was a huge Tiger Woods guy. I watched the PGA Tour when Tiger was doing well. Now that he's not on the tour, I don't watch it at all. I do love the majors, but I guess I also love the fact that they're the very best golfers. Now, how will I feel when the Masters roll out? I guess it just depends on, because, again, when I kind of go through a Rolodex of who I think is important golf-wise, that might be completely different than somebody else. You know what I mean? And, you know, how many of these guys defecting, then do you start to kind of look around and be like, boy, this feels weird that we're missing all these guys.
Yeah, I might feel that way for the first major or maybe even the first year. But honestly, if they're not going to earn enough points and they're going to go over and play golf in the LIV Tour and be guaranteed $100 million and I'm not going to see these tournaments, because right now they don't even have a TV deal. I'm guessing they might get a TV deal here, but great that they're going over and earning all this money. I don't have a problem with people leaving, as you said, to go over. And if somebody's offering you $100 million right now, regardless of where you finish each and every week, put yourself in that spot and see if you're taking the money. But my point is, as the majors start to roll along here, if those guys aren't involved, they become irrelevant because we're not watching them each and every week. We're not watching them at the majors. And you can tell me all you want that, you know, playing in these 54-hole tournaments once a month, that these guys are the best golfers in the world, I guess. But the next people are always coming along, and all the people that qualify for the majors have to do so in a certain way by earning points. And when you play well enough, and then you get to the majors, and then you play well, those are the people that are going to be relevant. And in next year's Masters, will you miss a couple guys? Sure. Maybe even the entire year as far as the majors are concerned. But at some point, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I don't see it going that long because I think this is hurting the PGA Tour so much that, and again, I'll use Dustin Johnson as more of an example. You know, when you start to get into recognizable players, understanding they're in the absolute prime of their career, I do think it has an effect on it and how you feel as a tournament. And I always say that from a standpoint of, I'm the Masters. I don't care about the PGA Tour. I want the best golfers. The best golfers in the world have the ability as contractors to go and play wherever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have my tournament and how I gauge that, you know, all those things can be a little different. But I can tell you right now that no matter how many points he gets, that Dustin Johnson and Cameron Smith are two of the top 10 golfers in the world, and I want them at my tournament. Now, if we're talking 5 years from now, 7 years from now, I agree. But I think this will come to a head sooner, Lee, because as I said, it's really going to, and you'll get into a conversation down the road of, well, I won the Masters, but do you remember the five of the top golfers in the world weren't there? I think it's going to really take away some of the feel to some of these things. I guess my summary is that at some point, this is going to have to give some way. And it was also kind of funny is that this was talked early on that none of them would play in any of the majors. Well, you obviously have a number of them, including Dustin Johnson, that have exemptions because they've won some of the tournaments. But my gosh, at the end of the day, the idea you can go play on the LIV Tour and still play in the majors, like what's not to like? Like,
well,
what?
Yes. Yeah, and those are for the guys right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You make a good point. But if you haven't won, if you don't have an exemption
into those tournaments,
then you know, you're not going to be able to qualify for it. Yeah. Text comes in, if LIV golfers aren't getting world ranking points, then how do you know any of them are top anything anymore? There's a reason these guys jumped to a no-cut tour.
Well, the reason is the money. Yeah, you can't say it. Now, there's some. I mean, certainly Phil Mickelson, I agree. But on Dustin Johnson and Cameron Smith, if you were to say in the next, it's like projecting anything, Lee, at least for the next 12 to 24 months, maybe longer, I know they're some of the best players in the world. For other guys at the end of their career, absolutely. I don't disagree. But they're still, like I said, that you'd have to say, hey, what has physically changed them and why do they go and do it? Well, they're just trying to take care of their family. They're recognizing that this is life-changing and they have the ability to go out and do something as a contractor who, more than any other sport, the minute you're injured, the minute things fall apart for you, you're done. So the money's there. It's guaranteed. Of course you take care of your family.
Do you almost feel like the PGA Tour made golfers feel like they're worth more than they are? Because I just think back, I produce Tee It Up on every Saturday morning, and it doesn't sit right with a guy like Kevin Hame that his sport that is really a big part of his life is almost becoming like it's like a prize fight almost. It's becoming like boxing in a sense. And I just think that like the true kind of blue blood golfers, the Rory McIlroys that are kind of really grinding out there, they are more inclined to stay on the PGA Tour, whereas, and this could be misguided, but Cameron Smiths of the world, they don't really kind of strike me as those kind of guys.
Well, I think that's easy to be those type of guys when you have a history and you've won in some different spots, so the money doesn't necessarily mean as much to you. But man, like, you're in a pretty good spot no matter what if you're turning down $100 million guaranteed to go play golf and not care if you win or lose.
But you have to as well, Lee and Cam, you have to go back to the root of the story. The Khashoggi murder is really the central part of what caused the trouble for Greg Norman, what it caused for Phil Mickelson, the discussion of the Saudis basically, you know, murdering and dismembering him. This was considered all of a sudden to be blood money. Rory McIlroy, it wasn't as much of breaking off of a tour. It was more of, I can't believe you're going to take the money from me. He took the moral high ground. That's more the feel to it. And I'm assuming for Tiger Woods at this point in his career, he didn't want to be associated with that, which, as I said, I respect. But like I said, if you're going to start tracing money in sports, Lee, and we go back to the National Basketball Association and about a $5 billion deal with China, you get into race car driving, you get into anything associated with Russia at this point, like I say, that's a slippery slope if you want to do it. But that was a whole division of it. It wasn't just that. And then if you want to look at the golf story itself, there's just a lot of golfers that have felt like for a long time, and I remember Tiger years ago complaining that the PGA just has too much control, you know, and this is part of, that's where you have to separate the two parts of the story and where it became, you know, very contentious. And I appreciate that Rory McIlroy wanted to do that, but if I'm a golfer, hey man, that's your own business. Don't be sitting here and telling me about where the money should come from. And as I say, look at the Masters as an entity and what that golf course had represented and still represents for many years, Lee. Like, come on. Like, get serious about some of these things here. We're gonna
I agree. Like, know, the money to me, like, you can be upset about it, but it's not the story for me. If people are going to go over and take, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to go play the game, we probably all would do the same. Like, I that doesn't even factor in for me. Yeah. It's the fact that these people are gonna go and play in tournaments that it doesn't matter who wins because they have guaranteed money. They don't have kind of the history of the tournaments themselves. Like, right now, could you tell me any tournament that the LIV golf tournament, like, what is the name of the tournament? What are they playing for? You know, whoever wins, does it matter? Because they all have guaranteed money. It's my entertainment value as a customer. I don't want to watch the LIV tour, not because I'm disgusted by these guys taking the money. It's because when I sit down to watch, I have no idea what I'm watching. Nobody cares on the course if they win or lose because they all have guaranteed money. There's no history of what it means to win those championships. So good for them. I'm good for them that they've gone over and taken some of the money and changed their lives and their family lives and everything else. But as a viewer and as a customer, I don't have any reason to sit down and watch that that tour.
No, and you make an excellent point, Lee, and it is the truest part of trying to form a sports league. And this is one of the things I look at the entity of the CFL. It is hard to create a brand, which they have. They have very good athletes. They have a 9-team league. They have something that is so hard. Nothing, in my estimation, will ever work in the United States that is anything below the NFL and between college. It won't work. You start to look at, when you turn on, you look at the stadium, you're like, ah, stadium doesn't look very good. Then you watch the players, they're not very good. The Canadian Football League has integrity. Now, there's different, well, I shouldn't say different levels, but you're trying to win a great cup. You're trying to win a championship. When you try to create these leagues suddenly and you go a little bit on the gimmick side, oh, absolutely. That's one of the reasons Derek Sanderson, by the time he went to the WHA, was on late night talk shows, hammered, smoking, and going off on drugs. Like, he had lost all of his moral compass because there was no purpose for playing. I love the Bobby Hull story when he's in the Winnipeg Jets training camp and he goes to put his socks on and he first thing he looks down, he says to himself, what the F did I do? You know, but those players had no choice. They were talking about $1 million a year versus 200 in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
But the integrity point of it, Lee, is absolutely accurate. It's really hard to do that. Like, you look at what is happening here in Canada with the soccer leagues and the basketball leagues. You start at these grassroots levels and you try and you want to build it up and you have the, you know, it just takes a lot of time. But as far as the golf and the LIV tour, you know, it sounds like it's just probably going to be a traveling party. Do you think any of those guys are really rolling in caring if they win? And the point strategy is certainly part of it, as you said, not to mention some of the purse things that end up happening. No, it's you know, and I agree with you. That's the reason I'd rather watch a long drive competition than watch the LIV tour.
Right. And you know? And again, when we talk about money.
I'll also say this, Lee, is that and for someone that doesn't watch much of the PGA Tour, like now when I kind of turn on the events on a weekly basis and a lot of guys aren't there, it does to me feel like they've hurt the tour without a doubt.
Lee, spare me the guaranteed money argument on the Live Tour as if they don't care if they win. They're professionals. I guess the Lightning players didn't care about winning the cup because they all had guaranteed contracts. That's a laughable text.
Yeah, and then the other part, Lee, and this is the part I appreciate there's some athletes in every sport, like Tom Brady, that show up every year to win a championship. I think people would be shocked at the junior level, college level, pro level of any sport. How many guys, okay, I'd love to win a championship, but at the end of the day, listen, I want to play the sport, I want to make money, mm-hmm. and I want to take care of my family. If I win a cup, you know, like Shane Doan, I'm going to play 300 years in the desert. I'm never going to get traded, and I don't care because I have a great life, and winning a Stanley Cup isn't necessarily the biggest priority for me.
And that's okay to me. Like, I get what people are saying, but there is something for people to chase. The history of the Stanley Cup.
Oh, absolutely.
And to there's tell also, people that yeah, that doesn't yeah. mean anything
oh, and
is,
to,
is
also
incredulous.
To and again, as a competitive athlete, Lee, I agree too. When you step on the ice, do you want to win? Oh, I think almost all of them do. Question is, do you approach every training camp and every season saying to yourself, well, listen, if I don't win the Stanley Cup this year, do you know what I mean? Like that's not necessarily the mentality. Even for teams that look at it when they go into a first round and say, you know what? I don't think we really got a chance here. You know, it becomes very methodical in their approach of, yeah, this ain't happening. We're not good enough, you know.
I get what you're saying when they get to that level, but I also think, Simmer, like as kids, people grow up. If you're a football player, you want to win the Super Bowl.
Oh,
you're a hockey player.
I agree.
You want to win the Stanley Cup.
Absolutely.
And if you're a golfer, you want to win the Masters. Yeah. You want to win the U.S. Open, the British Open. Yeah. Everything else. Yeah. What do you want to win on the Live Tour? I get it. Yeah. These people are all mad and they're getting a bunch of texts in here.
But I'd also say, what do you want to, like, do you grow up saying, I want to win the Wyndham Championship?
Nope.
No, and that's the part. Like, and I understand, though, there is something
100%
built in.
I don't.
And also, what's also very importantly is you travel around the PGA Tour, like how you're treated, all the stuff that people know how to put on a sporting event. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that goes into where the athletes will be looking around like, man, this kind of feels Mickey Mouse at the end of the day.
But if I win the Wyndham Championship, you know what that guarantees me?
You stay at Wyndham's the rest of your life for free.
Oh, that would be awesome.
There you go. I got one ahead of you.
Also, it guarantees me into majors and into the tournaments that I've always wanted to win.
Yeah, for sure.
So you're right. I'm not going to sit down as a viewer. And again, I come back to this as a viewer. I'm not sitting down on a Sunday to watch the Wyndham Championship. But I care about Canadians, and then I care about majors watching because of the history and what it means. When I sit down, I don't know what I'm watching with the Live Tour.
Yeah.
I got 54 holes of a shotgun start of guys that have already been paid and could care less if they win.
They're probably all doing shotguns on the first hole.
And that's the point. Good for them. They're having a great time. They're living life. I just don't have to watch it. Hour 4, TSN Mornings, coming up after a 580 CFRA news update here on TSN 1200.